In the sermon today, what I'd like to do, I'd like us to move forward in time and study the New Testament accounts of the human Jesus and his preparations for his Passovers. Now, it's important for us to remember, though I use the term New Testament accounts, but it's always important for us to remember, though, that although the gospel accounts of Jesus' human lifetime have been grouped within what we refer to as the New Testament, you have to remember that all 35 years of Jesus' human life were actually prior to the beginning of the New Covenant era. In other words, they were still under the Sinai Covenant era. We need to remember that for many reasons, and we'll touch on them as we go along. Now, last week, I made a mistake. Don't mind admitting my mistakes. Last week, I said that there are four of Jesus' Passovers mentioned in the Gospel accounts. There are actually five. I forgot about this important one in Luke chapter 2. Please be turning there. Luke chapter 2. This important first one from his youth that's mentioned in Luke chapter 2. And again, obviously it wasn't Jesus' first, as we're going to see right away. It wasn't Jesus' first Passover. Luke chapter 2 and all the way down to verse 41. Verse 41. Now his parents, Jesus' parents, went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. Now in many scriptures, in Old Testament and New Testament, including this way, this one, the terms Passover and the feast, or Feast of Unleavened Bread, they sometimes, not always, but sometimes and quite frequently include the full 8 days. They include the actual Passover night and day, plus the 7 nights and days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Another thing that we get from these verses here, that as Jesus' human parents were hand-picked by the Lord himself, we can be sure that they would have led their family in the faithful keeping of all the holy days every year, including the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And no doubt they would have kept all of the holy days, including the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened, at exactly the right time, and in exactly the right manner, and in exactly the right place. Okay, I say the right place because although the Passover night service certainly could be kept at home, and probably was kept at home for the residents who lived in the Jerusalem area, most Israelites, most able-bodied Israelites who lived out of town at any distance, would normally have had some significant round-trip travel to do in order to keep the feasts at Jerusalem 3 times each year. Can you imagine that? 3 times each year. They likely would have stayed in the Jerusalem area for the Passover and for the whole of the 7 days of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. With so many people in Jerusalem and in and around Jerusalem in the area for the spring holy days, many of those out-of-town Israelites, you know, most of them Jews in Jesus' time, they would have stayed within, or they would have stayed with their relatives who lived in the Jerusalem area. Otherwise, they would have stayed at inns, or they would have rented apartments or rooms especially, or if necessary, even in tents. They probably camped on the way down there, as we're going to see. And in those in the homes of the relatives, or in the inns, or the apartments or rooms, or even at their tents there. Many of them, although not all of them as we're going to see, many of them would have been preparing their Passover lamb suppers. So think about us when we go to the Feast of Tabernacles. Those trips to the Feast of Tabernacles every year require much in the way of preparation, and so did theirs, even more so for their annual Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread trips every year. And that's, if you think about it, in addition to all the deleavening they had to do and the other food preparation work that they had to do as well. So let's think for a minute about Jesus' family and their journeys to and from Jerusalem during these holy day seasons. I looked on Google Maps, good old Google Maps, and I found that the modern road distance from Nazareth to Jerusalem is about 150 kilometers, which is about 93 miles. This is about the same distance between Victoria and Parksville. And in modern times, that is just about 1¾ hours by car. But imagine if you had to hoof it, as many might have had to do back then, laden with all of their supplies, their camping gear, many of them with little children, and many of them, if you think about it, with live animals. Because many of the families would have had at least one live animal with them, that would be their Passover lamb. And in some cases, more live animals to possibly give as holy day offerings at the temple. Okay, it's true. Many of the families would likely have had the assistance of donkeys, mules, even camels or dromedaries, and also carts or carriages. Please turn over to Acts real quick, Acts chapter 21, and this is just a one verse reference here from Luke, who wrote the book of Acts, and he was with the apostle Paul during his missionary journeys. Acts chapter 21 and verse 15. Acts chapter 21 and verse 15. And after those days, we took up our carriages and went up to Jerusalem. Sometimes we think of Paul and the apostles and Jesus just hoofing it all the way, carrying a little backpack or something like that. But it's reasonable for us to believe that if you think about Jesus' stepfather, Joseph, he was a carpenter. He would likely have owned some kind of cart or carriage, which would have been drawn by a mule, a camel, a dromedary or a donkey. And all of those were very common to that era and that area. And that would have been, if you think about it, being a carpenter, that would have been the equivalent of a good-sized modern pickup truck. So, again now, according to Google Maps, I looked up the walking time from Nazareth to Jerusalem, and that would have been, to walk straight, would have been about 30 hours. 30 hours walk. And that's before factoring in meal breaks or other rest breaks. And of course, again, Nazareth was not the furthest village away from Jerusalem. There were other Israelite villages that were located even further from Jerusalem. But again, many of the Jews still made that trip three times every year for the holy days. And the timing of their travel was very interesting, and it was actually very critical for them, and especially for them to arrive in the Jerusalem area in time to settle into their temporary dwellings and to make the final preparations for the Passover. So, again, the thinking back to what we read last week in Exodus 12, the trouble time depended on how much of the Lord's instructions for the first Passover in Moses' time, how much of those instructions were to be adhered to in the subsequent years. For example, were the Israelites still required to choose their Passover lambs on the 10th day of the first month, according to what was instructed in Exodus chapter 12? If they did, then they had three choices. Think about this now in their preparations for the Passover. The first choice was to choose the Passover lamb on the 10th from their own flock back at home. You know, a lot of families had their own flocks. And then to leave immediately afterwards for their journey to Jerusalem. Okay? The second choice would be to leave home earlier than the 10th of the month and to choose or to buy a lamb from an appropriate seller, a lamb vendor en route. That's the second choice. The third one is probably quite unlikely, and that would be to leave home earlier than the 10th of the month and to take some or even all of their flock along with them and to choose the lamb en route on the 10th. So just to put this in context here, in the case of Jesus' family, if they would have left Nazareth immediately after choosing their Passover lamb, shortly after sunset that began the 10th day of the first month, they would have had to walk for a grueling 8 hours each day in order for them to get to Jerusalem in time for the Passover at the beginning of the 14th. 8 hours walk every day. And what about, you think about it as well, what about the many years when there would have been a weekly Sabbath included in their travel time? A weekly Sabbath on which they would have rested according to the commandments and would not have expended the effort of a full day's travelling. And that's just, you know, when you think of our Feast of Tabernacles trips today, much more so back then, all of these factors have to be taken into consideration and prepared for well in advance. Okay. Now think about when they got to Jerusalem. Upon their arrival at Jerusalem, Jesus' family would quickly get settled into their temporary dwellings wherever they were, and they would make their final preparations for their keeping of the Passover. And once again, Jesus and his family would have kept the Passover at the correct time and the correct place, strictly according to the Holy Scriptures. In other words, at the beginning of the 14th day of the first month of the sacred year, not at the day's end, as was the incorrect practice of many of the Jews. We'll get into that a little bit more next week. Also, according to the Lord's commands, for the Jerusalem area residents, in their own homes, they could keep the Passover in their own homes. For the visitors to Jerusalem, in their own individual temporary dwellings is where they had to keep the Passover, not at the temple. And that was, keeping it at the temple was the incorrect custom of many of the Jews. So now, once the Bible's curtain, if you will, rises on Jesus' adult life, at the very beginning of his public ministry, we find him still obeying his own commands by diligently preparing for the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Please turn to John chapter 2, John chapter 2. And this is the first Passover of Jesus' adult ministry. And we believe, people argue over the dates, but I believe that this occurred in 27 AD. John chapter 2 and verse 12. John chapter 2, verse 12. After this, after the water to wine miracle at Cana, he went down to Capernaum. He and his mother and his brethren and his disciples, and they continued there not many days, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So, and this is mentioned just off the cuff, and we read right over it. It sounds like a simple journey. But Capernaum was 164 kilometers, which is about 102 miles from Jerusalem. And that is if they would have traveled directly without going back via Nazareth. So this is the equivalent of the distance from Qualicum Beach to Victoria. And that would be, if you're going non-stop, that would be a 35-hour walk, approximately 9 hours per day, if they would have chosen their Passover lambs on the 10th day of the month before departing, and so cramming their trip into 4 days. Pretty grueling trip, a 9 hour walk every day. And, you know, brethren, we're not told the actual dates and the timing of their journeys, but we can be absolutely sure that they would have left well in time in order to arrive to complete their final preparations for Passover night. Now, on this particular occasion, when they arrived at Jerusalem, what did they find? Verse 14, Jesus found vendors in the outer courts of the temple illegally making money out of the upcoming Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread. Say illegally, according to God's laws. Verse 14, and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. So again, depending on the actual timing here, it's possible that some of the sheep that they were selling were for the Passover as well as for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Holy Day offerings, along with the oxen and the doves also mentioned. What did Jesus do? We know that he cleared these vendors out of the temple property. I don't think it was really wrong that they were selling oxen and sheep and doves or even changing money. But that wasn't the place for it, you know. Get back to your stores where you want to do that. But after Jesus cleared these vendors out of the temple property, he made an interesting prophecy. A prophecy for 3 years after this Passover season. Verse 18, jump down to verse 18. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, what sign show you unto us, seeing that you do these things? Jesus answered and said unto them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Verse 21. But he spoke of the temple of his body. And so he knew that the temple of his body was going to be destroyed 4 years later. And we know that these greedy vendors returned. Of course they did. And probably returned with the approval of the Jewish religious leaders of the time. We know that that they came back because this event was repeated 3 years later, just before Jesus' last Passover, and we'll come to that probably next week. Jesus, though, while he was in Jerusalem during that Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread season, Jesus made good use of his precious time there. verse 23. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. And on this feast day here was probably referring to the first day of unleavened bread. Okay, let's go over now, skip over a year and go to the second Passover of Jesus' adult ministry. So this now was in 28 AD. Now, it's interesting here because Jesus' second Passover is not actually mentioned in the scriptures per se. There's one scripture that some Bible scholars believe that is the reference to one of the Feast of Unleavened Bread holy days, and that's in Luke chapter 6 and verse 1. If you'd like to turn there, please. Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6 and verse 1. And it came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the cornfields, and his disciples plucked the ears of corn and did eat, rubbing them in their hands. So the second Sabbath after the first. And if you look into the commentaries, you find that various Bible scholars are very much divided on the actual timing of this verse. Okay, some of them think that it's referring to one of the Feast of Unleavened Bread holy days. Some scholars think that it is referring to the Feast of Pentecost, right? Because you've got the Sabbath and then the holy day. And some scholars think that it's either the first holy day of the Feast of Tabernacles or the Last Great Day. So a lot of divided opinion on that. But it's also interesting, though, that there is definitely some scriptural evidence that Jesus might have stayed up north in Galilee during that Passover season, and that he didn't travel down to Jerusalem at all. And that might be a surprise to you, but it brings up another question that it's been argued over as well. And as we move down now into Jesus' third Passover of his adult ministry in 29 AD, and we do have a solid reference to that. But the question is, was attendance at Jerusalem absolutely mandatory for the keeping of every holy day? Let me repeat that. Was attendance at Jerusalem absolutely mandatory for the keeping of every holy day? Now, just as an aside, if you think about it, the Israelites were probably, I'm sure they were keeping the holy days for 40 days while they wandered in the wilderness, nowhere near Jerusalem. Even when they came into the promised land, it was many years before they actually settled in Jerusalem. Okay, so we can argue and say, well, the tabernacle, you know, they would normally go where the tabernacle was, and that's a possibility. But looking in this one, let's go back to the book of John again, please. And let's John chapter 6. Again, we're in the third Passover of Jesus' adult ministry, 29 AD. John chapter 6. And look where Jesus was again prior to that Passover. John chapter 6, verse 1. After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him, because they saw his miracles, which he did on them which were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. So the Passover was nigh or near. Where was Jesus? Another Passover was imminent, and Jesus was way up north again. Maybe not as far north as Capernaum, doesn't actually say, but somewhere in the Galilee Lakeshore area, which is even the very south of Galilee, Lake of Galilee, is a minimum of 140 kilometers north of Jerusalem, 87 miles, a 28-hour walk. But once again, none of the four gospel accounts actually state that Jesus went to Jerusalem for that Passover season. They don't actually state that. And as we read on, we read down after verse 4 here, we read about the feeding of the 5,000, and then we find that after the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus is still up north. He's still in the Galilee Lake area. Verse 14. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, "This is of a truth that prophet that should come into this world." When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down unto the sea. We know the sea was the Sea of Galilee, because it says in verse 17, and entered into a ship and went over the sea toward Capernaum. So again, he was still up north, and there's no mention of them traveling down to Jerusalem for the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You can compare all of the Gospel accounts, and you'll find that none of them actually make that specification. Let me read you something from John Gill's commentary, John Gill's Bible commentary, just a couple of paragraphs from that. He says, and I quote, "This was the third Passover since our Lord's baptism and entrance on his public ministry." He says, "Whether Christ went up to this feast," in other words, up to Jerusalem to this feast, "is not certain. Some think that he did not, but from what is said in John 7, it looks as if he did." Now, okay, in John 7, in which Jesus later went to Jerusalem in secret for that year's autumn feast season, you don't have to turn there, he says it looks as if he did. It's pretty vague, but John Gill says, "How nigh it was to the feast cannot well be said." And then he gives some generalities here. He says, 30 days before the feast, they, the Jews generally, began to talk about it. And especially in the last 15 days, they made preparations for it, as it being at hand. And if there was now so long time to it, there was time enough for Jesus to go to it. Okay, but it doesn't specify. So, close quote there. Now, of course, we absolutely know that Jesus never would have missed the actual keeping of any of his own holy days. And after all, you know, over and over he said things like, and I quote these verses here, he said things like, "Thus it becomes us to fulfill all righteousness," that Jesus had to fulfill all righteousness. Another time he said, "All things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses." Okay, but again, not necessarily at Jerusalem. The keeping of the Passover and all of the holy days were part of Jesus' preparations and the Father's preparations too. But again, the question comes, was attendance at Jerusalem absolutely mandatory for the keeping of every holy day? And I'm going to say probably not. In fact, I'd say definitely not, because we look at the example of the Apostle Paul, and we find that during Paul's extensive missionary journeys, where he was away probably for years on end, and again, this was years after his conversion, you know, he was unable to get back to Jerusalem for any of the holy days. So, was it mandatory? Was it absolutely mandatory? I would say no. So, just maybe, Jesus kept these two Passover seasons up north in Galilee. That's a possibility. So now we move on to the fourth and final Passover of Jesus' adult ministry, and now this is 30 AD. As Jesus' fourth and final Passover approached, Jesus and the disciples were in Bethany. Bethany, where Jesus and the Father had just raised up Lazarus from the dead. And when they did that, that really increased the ire of the wicked Jewish leaders against Jesus, even more against Jesus, but also against poor Lazarus. You know, poor Lazarus. They didn't want anybody to see him. But anyway, Bethany, it says he was in Bethany. Now, Bethany was a village that was very close to Jerusalem. It was on the southeast slope of the Mount of Olives and just a short walk from the temple. Once Jesus became aware that Caiaphas had pronounced a death sentence on him, in order to keep to the correct pre-planned timing for his death, in the vernacular, Jesus got out of Dodge. Okay, go down to chapter 11, John chapter 11, please. John chapter 11. And all the way down to verse 53, John chapter 11, verse 53. Then from that day forth, they, he's talking about the evil Jewish leaders, took counsel together for to put him to death. Jesus therefore walked no more openly among the Jews, but went thence unto a country near to the wilderness, into a city called Ephraim, and there continued with his disciples. So look this up in Easton's Bible Dictionary. Talked about says that this city of Ephraim, I don't think it was actually a city, but more of a village. It says that Ephraim lay in the wild, uncultivated hill country to the northeast of Jerusalem, between the central towns and the Jordan Valley. Probably wasn't too far from Jerusalem, but far enough away that his enemies wouldn't be looking for him there. But still, what we're seeing here is that it was necessary for Jesus yet to watch his timing very carefully, and he had to be very wary, of course, of these evil Jewish leaders. Now, it's important to remember that Jesus was not running away from death itself. He absolutely knew better than anybody else that he was about to die. But the timing had to be exactly right. Exactly right. Verse 55, still in John chapter 11, verse 55. And the Jews' Passover was nigh at hand, and many went out of the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. Now, John does not specify how long before the Passover that this nigh at hand was. We should note here that there was a period of purification required in preparation for the Passover. And let me quote from another Bible commentary here. This is Barnes' notes, Barnes's commentary on this part of this verse. He says, This purifying consisted in preparing themselves for the proper observation of the Passover according to the commands of the law. And that, brethren, was the various scriptures in Leviticus and Numbers. Back to Barnes, he says, if any were defiled in any manner, for example by contact with the dead or by any other ceremonial uncleanness, they were required to take the prescribed measures for purification. He says, for want of this, great inconvenience was sometimes experienced. You see, planning had to be done, preparation had to be done by the Israelites and by the Jews of Jesus' time. Barnes still, different periods were necessary in order to be cleansed from ceremonial pollution. For example, one who had been polluted by the touch of a dead body, of a sepulchre, or by the bones of the dead, was sprinkled on the third and seventh days by a clean person with hyssop, dipped in water mixed in the ashes of the red heifer. After washing his body and clothes, he was then clean. These persons who went up before the Passover were doubtless those who had in some manner been ceremonially polluted. So this pre-Passover purification practice is actually reflected in the New Testament by Paul's admonition in 1 Corinthians 11. Don't have to turn there now, we'll come to it next week. By Paul's admonition for God's new covenant people to observe a period of self-examination. A period of self-examination prior to the Passover each year, in order to avoid taking the Passover in an unworthy manner, in a spiritually impure manner. Okay, still in John chapter 11, continuing in verse 56. Then sought they for Jesus, and spoke among themselves as they stood in the temple, what think you? That he will not come to the feast? Now both the chief priests and the Pharisees had given a commandment that if any man knew where he were, he should show it, that they might take him. So it indicates here then that Jesus did not go to the temple for this annual pre-Passover purification. And we know that Jesus was totally without sin, and that he did not need to be ritually purified. So now we go over into John chapter 12. And as we go into chapter 12, we find Jesus then emerging from his wilderness refuge, coming out of Ephraim, the village of Ephraim, and returning to Bethany. John chapter 12 and verse 1. Then Jesus, 6 days now before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Now again, we can look at this and say, okay, six days before the Passover, depending on exactly how this 6 days was counted, in other words, was it counted inclusively or exclusively? Was it counted back from the Passover evening, or was it counted back from the Passover day? This 6 days before the Passover could have been the sixth or the seventh or even the eighth day of the first month. Not a big deal. Just an interesting point when we try, you know, some people try to be dogmatic about exactly what day it was. Still, on whichever date it actually was, another very important preparation event occurred at this supper. And we read about that in verse 3. Verse 3, then took Mary, now this Mary is the sister of Lazarus and Martha, Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with their hair. And the house was filled with the odor of the ointment. And then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, "Why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor?" This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and he had the bag and bore what was put therein. And then said Jesus, "Let her alone. Against the day of my burying has she kept this." Now in those days, it was common to embalm the dead with ointments and spices. And Jesus is suggesting here that the time of his death and burial were imminent, and that Mary, without knowing this, she didn't know that his death was imminent. And without knowing this, but we believe that perhaps she'd been led by the Holy Spirit to do this, she kept this ointment until now for just such a purpose. That's what Jesus was saying there. Because as it turned out, and as was later recorded in the Gospel accounts, we know that Mary would not have been able to make use of this ointment at the actual time of Jesus' actual interment. But she'd been inspired to embalm his body, his feet anyway, with this ointment, the spikenard, beforehand, in advance. She anointed his feet. And I want you to notice, we're not going to turn there now, we'll come to it next week, but this was a different anointing from a similar one that's mentioned in Matthew 26 and Mark 14, which took place a few days later. Don't have to turn there now, we'll come back and look at that next week when we get to it. So, still in John chapter 12, verse 9, not only was Jesus making very significant preparations at that time, we find that his enemies were making very significant preparations as well, as we've already seen. Verse 9, "Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there." He was there at Bethany, at Lazarus' house. And they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. Poor Lazarus had become something of a celebrity. Verse 10, "But the chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death," poor Lazarus, "because that by reason of him many of the Jews went away." In other words, went away from the corrupt priests and away from the Pharisee cronies, and believed on Jesus. On the following day, in other words now 5 days before the Passover, Jesus entered into Jerusalem in what some refer to as his triumphal entry. Verse 12, "On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches." Okay, so now that the time for Jesus' long prophesied sacrifice was imminent, it was at last time for Jesus to move closer to the place that it was all to take place. It was time for him to make his final trip into Jerusalem, his official trip into Jerusalem. Verse 13, "So the people came and they took branches of palm trees and went forth to meet him and cried, Hosanna, blessed is the King of Israel that comes in the name of the Lord. And Jesus, when he had found a young ass, sat thereon, as it is written, Fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, your king comes, sitting on an ass's colt." So this event was also a very necessary part of Jesus' preparation in order to fulfill the prophecy of Zechariah chapter 9 and verse 9. You don't have to turn there. And so Jesus came into Jerusalem. According to Matthew's parallel gospel account, Jesus was come into Jerusalem. So during the next days, Jesus went openly to the temple in the daytime, and even publicly preaching there in the temple. But in the evening, every evening, he returned to Bethany in order to avoid being arrested too early. Again, the timing had to be perfectly correct.